Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here we are, and it is February 26th, halfway, I guess, sort of. Not really, actually. I guess it's only maybe two-fifths of the way through tax season.
It's pretty close. And a lot's transpired, so it could feel like half.
I tell you, you know, you get to the end of February and you feel like you've already done a lot, but you probably have only done about 10% of what you got to do before April 15th.
March always just is a crusher.
Yeah, and that 15th to 31st is really the big push, and then those first 5 days of April are a bit of a crunch for us, and then we kind of glide into the 15th. Now, other companies, they go all the way, all out from this point on until April 15th. Those types of CPAs are swamped.
Yeah, the ones that have the cots at the office.
They
right?
literally, I mean, I know a lot of people that literally work at this time of year from 6 o'clock in the morning until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. Really, you know?
It's really something. Now, those are the ones you're talking about that have TVs in the room watching the basketball?
I have no idea.
I know a few of those.
You know a few of them?
They literally have a TV there watching March Madness.
And they eat pizza like 90% of the time from this point on until the end of tax season.
Takes all summer to come out of it.
Yeah, really. I mean, they're literally working 16 to 18 hours a day to get through tax season. And I know a lot of them that just finally get to the point where they say, I ain't doing this anymore. They do it for, some do it only for a few years, and then they're out of there. Some of them, though, I know some that are, you know, 30, 35 years into doing that, and finally they're getting tired.
Yeah, so just block out 2 months, block out 10 weeks.
Yeah, and every year for 30 years or whatever they do that. And, you know, ours isn't that bad because we only do tax returns for clients of ours. So you have to be a financial planning client of ours before we're going to do a tax return for them. And so we do a lot of returns, but you know, it's not overwhelming for us.
Yeah, but it did for years. I never really got into the March Madness basketball. I'm a basketball fan, but college basketball, because we were doing tax returns. Just no time for it.
Yeah, we did do a lot of, you know, it was a little more to us back then. Because you didn't have the software to do it and things of that sort.
Well, it's just a busy time. So in that, there's not a lot of time for extra stuff, you know.
Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, Chris. And so anyone can call in and ask their question. It's their turn to ask any question they want to, but they could ask it about their tax return if they want. Mm-hmm. They could ask it about their IRA or estate planning or general income taxes or investments or IRA accounts. And, you know, this is the time of year, and we see a lot of mistakes in this, that there are people out there that are promoting the concept to put your money into a non-deductible IRA and then convert it to a Roth, and that you can do this, and, you know, it's real easy. And it's not that easy. You have to understand this rule, and you need to understand it well. And if you make a mistake, you could cost the client a lot of heartache and potential tax liability. So, you know, it's the making a non-deductible IRA contribution requires you to be out of all deferred income unless you're willing to pay taxes on the deferred income of those IRAs in order to do that type of conversion. It's a much more complicated thing than I think is being taught to people. In other words, there are people out there that are saying you could put a non-deductible contribution into, say, a Vanguard account,
right,
but your other IRAs, your rollover IRAs and your simple IRAs are over at Merrill Lynch and Charles Schwab, but your non-deductible IRA, I put it into Vanguard. And so I took my Vanguard non-deductible IRA and I converted it to a Roth IRA, so it's tax-free because this is the money I never got tax deduction for. Well, that's not how the law works. So hear me, that's not how the law works. You don't do it that simple. You can't designate an account and say, this is my non-deductible account. That's not the way the IRS does it. They do it through a form called 8606 that when you put a non-deductible IRA in, you account for the bases. But when you convert or take money out of the account, it's pro rata against all the IRAs you have, whether they're simple IRA, SEP IRA, traditional IRA, rollover IRA. It doesn't matter if it's your IRA, they're going to treat it as an IRA. And it's going to be pro rata with the bases. So if you have 50,000 of traditional IRAs and 5,000 of bases, then 10% of your money is in after-tax money. 10%? Yeah, I got that right. 10% of your money is in after-tax, and 45,000 is before-tax money. That's the way that the situation works. Anyway, we have callers already calling in, Chris.
That's good. We've got an open show. Look forward to it.
And this is an interesting question, this first one here. Tom, how can we help you?
What happened to Bitcoin? I read the article in the Spalmer Sun, and I actually got nothing out of it. What happened?
Well, I'm not sure the full story yet, because this is really just developing.
Okay.
But from what I understand, their website just disappeared. I'm not sure how that happened.
Never a good sign.
Yeah, it's never a good sign. But, you know, Bitcoin's an interesting concept.
I love it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's
anything to get rid of the Federal Reserve. Anything.
Well, I understand that, Tom, but
you and get the politicians out of the money. Get them away from it.
You're absolutely right that it would be a potentially good thing in the long, long term. But you know, you got to understand how Bitcoin operates, and you got to understand whether you really do have real money when you invest with somebody like Bitcoin.
Understand.
And I was never sold on Bitcoin. You know, I mean, you know, Bitcoin is not like a prepaid card. You know, like you put money into a prepaid card and
right,
you have extra
right.
cash.
Right.
This is literally where you were giving your money to somebody else. They were giving you a currency in return for it.
Correct.
It's a very different. You know what it's actually more like? It's more like the mint. What was that? Mint?
No, you're right. You're right.
It's like a minted gold coin.
And you're converting it into another currency. A virtual currency, okay?
And
But the basis behind the value of Bitcoin, this is what bothered me, and that's why I stayed away from it, was supposedly based on, commodities and gold, silver.
Yes.
And the value was, but the speculation going on was, that's what made me stay away from it.
Right,
I was
absolutely.
That it would go through because I love the concept.
The concept is good, but you were wise to stay away from it.
Well,
because there's no assurance that the originators were going to keep that. There was. It's just like, you know, if you gave your money to the Korean won, you had to be sure that the Korean Central Bank was keeping enough reserves to protect the value of that currency. Bitcoin is the exact same thing.
Right.
And this is what a lot of investors didn't understand on Bitcoin. But I'm not sure what really has happened. All I know is their website disappeared.
I've been told now on the web that it has been suspended.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not sure. I feel sorry for people who have invested in it because, you know, this is the type of thing that can just blow up and become worth zero. Anyway, Tom, it was a great call. It's a great question. Bitcoin is an interesting concept. There will come a day where virtual money will become a reality. I'm not necessarily sure Bitcoin was the one I would want to put my money with. All right. Take care, Tom.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks. Maggie Hunter and Traffic, and we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show today. So we can take any questions from any listener for anything that they want to talk about.
And they know the number to call, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first two people did because I never announced it, did I? 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask your question. 410-922-6680. And while we were gone, Tom, we did a little more homework on Bitcoin, and it seems as if the currency could be in the verge of collapse because one of its major exchanges, place that you would go and exchange your Bitcoin back for money, was, you know, just like you do in the currency market. Mm-hmm. So if I want dollars to be converted back to ones, or I want ones converted back to dollars, I go to the currency markets and I trade my currencies. Well, Bitcoin had to have a currency market that you could trade the Bitcoins on. One of the major ones, Mt. Gox in Tokyo, has collapsed and it shut down. It just disappeared. And this is the kind of thing why when I see people doing these things with Bitcoin, I'm thinking, these people really understand how dangerous it is to trade a commodity like that that's virtual, and you're really just trusting that these exchanges are going to exist. That's why every time you buy a new issue stock or something of that sort, there's always a warning in the prospectus that says, there's no guarantee a market is always going to be available for this security. Anyway, that was the problem with that's really starting to happen with Bitcoin.
Right.
Anyway, the next question is going to be just as interesting. Mark in Ellicott City, how can we help you?
I've been seeing a lot of information, and the stock is just going crazy with Tesla. And I was wondering if you were familiar with it and the validity of what's happening.
Well, there's no doubt that Tesla stock has gone up amazingly. I mean, just a year or so ago, Tesla stock was trading for about $30 a share, and I think it closed today at $250 or something ridiculous like that. So in about a year, you've had a 1,000% increase. Now, is it justified? I mean, they make very, very little money. And, you know, you still don't have a wide acceptance of electric cars. Yet it's going to come. There's no doubt that electric cars is a logical concept for the future. And there's no doubt that Tesla has a major lead over most of the other people in the electric car. I mean, their car gets, 300 miles or so. And it's one of the best-looking and fastest electric cars around. What people are investing in Tesla is more Elon Musk. You know who Elon Musk is?
The CEO?
Yeah. He's the brains behind this company. He's like the Steve Jobs of Tesla. And
yeah,
it's all about him. It's all about his brilliance, and it's all about what gadgets and gadgets he's going to come up with next. And one of the reasons the stock took off, because the stock did plummet recently. It went from 180 or 90 down to like 130, and then boom, it shot back up to 250. One of the things that they're now driving the stock higher on is the concept that they're working on even building a better battery for the company. Elon Musk has some ideas of how to build an even better battery, and they're building a new plant where they're going to control their own batteries possible. And people believe that this is going to be a big thing. Now, here's my end take on this, all right? This is something to think about. General Motors traded for a valuation pre the crash of 1929 that, if I'm not mistaken, and I'd have to go back and research this for sure, so I'm doing this from memory, but if I'm not mistaken, it took until somewhere around 1966 until General Motors traded for a higher valuation. In other words, investors back in 1927 saw the future of General Motors, believed in the future of General Motors, but they didn't realize that there was going to become this thing called the Great Depression between their enthusiasm and when the company ultimately got to be where they were.
Uh-huh.
And so are investors doing that in Tesla stock today? You know, there's a possibility of that, but Elon Musk could be so brilliant that he comes up with so many great ideas that he makes, $250 a share prove to be, ridiculous. The stock is trading at a very high valuation, but it's just something you have to think about. All right?
Sure. All right, thank you.
All right, buddy, take care.
Very speculative, so.
There's no doubt, you know, I mean, other companies can come up with electric cars, and they have. And you got to have electric stations in order for it to become widely accepted. I mean, there's only a couple of people in California that buy these things.
Well, the same thing happens with, you see more and more, they're going towards diesel more and more, but diesel's hard to get. It's hard to find. Not that many stations have diesel.
Yes.
Although.
But electric's even more difficult to find. Now, Noah says that he knows somebody who has an electric car.
Okay.
And, but, you know, if you're out and about and you don't have, you don't have an electric plug to get into, you got a problem possibly. Scott in Baltimore, what can we help you with?
How are you guys doing today?
Good, and you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Doing excellent. Had a quick question. I listen to a lot of great programs on the station, and some of these guys are talking. I have a general 401k retirement plan through my job
right.
that I've had for the past 11 years. I'm 35 right now. And I hear some of these programs talk about these guaranteed interest accounts, where you experience all of the upside but none of the downside of the market. And I know there's got to be either some kind of fee or, what's the catch with those types of things?
The catch is very complicated, and there is no guaranteed, by the way. And they don't use the word guaranteed. If they do, they have to be very careful that they don't get sued for using the word guaranteed. Now, they might guarantee that you won't go down in value, but they can't guarantee you that you're ever going to make any money in the account. And the upside. And what the issue is the fees in the account. The fees in the account is number one. And then how they compute what you're going to make on the upside. And then when that computation is done, minus the fees in the account, determines what you're going to get. And yes, they may guarantee no downside, but, let's say the market average is 6% a year. You would think you're going to get 6% a year, but you may only end up with 2.5% after all the fees per year.
Uh-huh.
And so these are the things that you have to understand. And one of the issues we always speak about when you really analyze these correctly is that they're mentioning the rate of return of the market. But when they say that, they're talking about a very specific index move, okay? And it's based on their formula. And when you look at that formula, every time I've ever seen one, and I can't guarantee it's the one you might be looking at, but every time I've ever seen one, it does not include the dividends that those stocks pay. It's only the price movement based on a specific index and based on a formula, how they calculate it, minus the fees in the account. And when you put that all together, your upside potential becomes a lot different than what it sounds like when they're talking about them.
So you're limiting your risk, and you're also, it sounds like, significantly limiting your upside as well.
If you believe in John Bogle says fees are everything. Fees are everything. And the fees in these things normally can average anywhere from 3%, and I've seen as high as 5%. So that's what you're up against. And they don't ever use the word guaranteed interest. They may use the word guaranteed no downside, but you can get the upside. What they don't really fully talk about is how the fees affect that. All right?
Gotcha. That answered my question. Thank you very much.
All right, Scott. Take care. Good question. Leo, if you hold on, I'll take you right after the non-break. So hold on. Right now we got to go to Maggie Hunter and traffic. Take it away, Maggie.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're back again. We're on an open show. What do you got there, Noah? I know that. I know this one. We should tell.
Sound like John Denver.
That's what I was going to say, Chris. John Denver.
That's good. I read your mind.
There you go. All right.
I read your mind.
Very kind there. Very very soft song there, Noah. Nice. Very nice. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and get your question answered, whatever it might be, you could talk about anything. So far, we've talked about Bitcoin and Tesla, two speculative things, one that may be blowing up, Bitcoin, and the other one which is just going up. and it just never seems to stop going up. So anyway, if you want to call in and ask your question, 410-922-6680. So we're going to Leo real quick. Leo, you were waiting so kindly on the line, and now we're going to take your question. What's up, Leo?
Fine, thanks for taking my call. Oh, yeah, I want to piggyback on that other Tesla question. We all know what the price of a Tesla is, but does anybody actually know what the cost of a Tesla is?
You mean a cost as to how much it takes to operate one?
No, how much it costs to build one.
To produce one.
So many rebates and government kickbacks and everything from the parts to the labor to the manufacturing plant.
Yeah, I don't know. What do they cost to buy? 60,000-70,000? Isn't that what the typical one has been?
They talk about that, but I don't think that they sell any at that. I think they all sell at 100,000.
Okay.
But, they're going to issue some convertible notes. And at some point, those convertible notes have to be based on something real, right?
The convertible notes would be, the guarantee of the company to pay the debt back, which would have priority over the stockholders. So, if they do have plants and they do have equipment and so forth, the stockholders would hold the first right against that. And if the company were to go in bankruptcy, the bondholders could take over the company and run it without any stockholders if they felt they could keep it running. That's what happened to General Motors. Well, actually, they cheated the bondholders to some degree in that deal because the government got involved. But that's another story.
What I'm getting at is, at some point, are they going to have to say how much it actually costs?
No. Well, that's strictly, you could probably go into their annual reports or their 10-Ks and maybe be able to figure that out if you wanted to.
Well, no, I mean, like, for instance, like the battery plant that they have, that battery has all kind of government subsidies on it.
Right.
Like I say, their location, the real estate and their plant, of course, has local and federal law.
You're bringing up a great point. Anytime you have a company like this that the government thinks that this is the way of the future, they do provide a lot of incentives to them. And, who knows if they're really a profitable company when you consider the money, the grants, the incentives and so forth they might be getting from the United States government in California. I think that's what you're getting at here, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, isn't somebody at some point going to figure out what it really costs?
Well, is it a really good business?
Just go into the numbers. You could dig into it.
Yeah, you could.
Find those things out. But
it's all
speculation, though.
I'm not interested in Tesla, so I'm not doing a lot of homework on it. I will tell the listeners one thing, okay? So if you think Tesla is an interesting company, especially because of Elon Musk, I think you ought to go over to Hong Kong and look at a company over there called BYD. BYD is the company that Warren Buffett has put money into. They also have a very successful electric car in China that they're now bringing to the United States. And the guy that runs BYD is supposedly just as brilliant as Elon Musk. And they have three companies. They don't just have one. They have the car company, they have a solar company, and they have a third company that right at this minute I can't remember. They have a third company all operating. So they have actual profitable company with the electric cars, and they have a brilliant guy at the top, and Warren Buffett and them invest in it, and the stock isn't nearly as overpriced as Tesla is. So it's a company other people ought to look at.
Well, Elon Musk has a solar company, too.
Yeah, I know, but is it part of Tesla?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think it was part of Tesla. Tesla is strictly the auto company, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not positive because I haven't really looked at Tesla stock. But BYD, I know a good bit about. I've looked at it. It's a very interesting company. And, you know, if you're interested in Tesla, you ought to look at BYD. I got to run, Leo. Good question.
Okay.
It is a good question there. We're going to Joe in Hampstead. Joe, how can we help you?
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one, can you give me a meaning or explanation of these three instruments, IRA, CD, and IRACD, or are they all one and the same?
Okay. Well, let's start off with an IRA is what's known as an individual retirement account. Okay? Now, that wording is part of the Internal Revenue Code as to any account that meets the qualifications of a custodian, an institution that's a qualified custodian that allows you to invest retirement money tax-deferred. All right?
Yeah.
So this account is merely a general concept for an IRS code. And it has to meet certain qualifications for an institution and what the institution has to do to monitor this and so forth and so forth. Now, a CD, Certificate of Deposit, is a specific investment that a bank offers for a short period of time or a long period of time where they're paying interest on money you've lent to the bank. All right, now, put the two together. And let's say, M&T Bank were offering an individual retirement account, something the IRS is saying, okay, M&T, you have to meet these rules and qualifications to be a retirement account, then M&T can say, and when you do one of these with us, and we are meeting the IRS code standard, we'll let you invest in a CD with us. So an IRA CD would be a CD that is invested with a bank that meets all the criteria to be a IRS-qualified individual retirement account.
So do you mean they take your IRA funds and then dump them into a CD account? And you have an IRA CD?
Yes, all IRAs are these retirement accounts that the institution has said we will meet the standards of the IRS, and then you get to invest those IRA monies into an investment that institution has to offer. Banks typically offer CDs, okay? Brokerage firms offer mutual funds, stocks, bonds, annuities. Insurance companies typically offer just annuities. So it depends on the institution as to what investments they're going to offer you to invest your IRA money you've placed with them to be invested in, if I made that clear.
Yes. Do you have to claim annual taxes on CDs and IRA CDs, do you know?
If it's just a CD with M&T, then that CD interest is reportable on your tax return. But if you put that CD inside the IRA, in other words, I put an IRA with M&T Bank, and I say, now I want that to be invested in a CD, because it's in an IRA, Joe, you do not have to report it.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Yes, my second question.
All right, real quick, go ahead.
All right, I have some assets, and I have them in two names, my PR's name and my name, and I'm curious and quite quizzical about, is it best to keep them in both names or
not? No, you've made a major mistake.
Pardon?
You've made a major mistake.
Please tell me.
So let's say when you said your PR's name, you meant your personal representative.
Correct.
Okay. And your personal representative, is that the sole person you want to inherit your money?
Yes, and to follow through with the requests I have in the
No. Well, what are your requests? What are your requests?
To do with what I have written in my will.
But I mean, are your requests like to give it to your children? Do you have children?
Yes.
Okay, do you want your PR to give it to your children?
As part of it, yes.
Well, you know, what you did when you put them in joint name with your PR, you've left them 100% to your personal representative. It's his or her money, and he has no obligation to give it to anybody else unless he decides to do it.
I'm looking at it in this angle, if you will. If I were to be sued or my PR were to be sued, is there any kind of shielding there on those assets?
Yes, possibly, because those assets would have a hard time to go after them. But I would be much more. I would use a much different strategy to protect those assets than to do it in joint name with my PR. Because now I've disinherited everybody I wanted to leave the money to, and I've now left the money solely to my PR.
Well, I would inherently be 200% trustful of the PR.
Well, you might be 200% trustful of the PR, and he may follow through, but there's other tax obligations. Is this a small sum of money? Is it like 20 or 30 or 50, 100,000, or is it $1 million?
Oh, no. A couple hundred thousand.
A couple hundred thousand. You know, again, it's not the way that any professional would encourage somebody to do. But I hear why you're doing it, and I would disagree with it. But if your PR does what you say, it might work, but there are still plenty of issues to be concerned about. I would prefer to have just left the money in your name.
Only?
And in your name only. You know, I'd have good insurances so that if anybody sued you, you would protect yourself with good insurance.
I didn't know you could have insurance on that.
On what?
On being sued with ownership of assets in your name only.
But you only can get sued if you do something wrong and you have insurance to protect you, that if you do something wrong, you would be protected, that they would insure you, that they would pay those claims if you had a bad accident or, you know, something like that. You're not going around punching people or anything, are you, Joe?
Usually not.
Usually not.
Sounds very reasonable.
You know, yeah. As long as you're not going around doing something grossly negligent, like shooting people or punching people, you probably can insure yourself that you could protect those monies for $200 a year buying an umbrella liability insurance policy and never worry about it. I mean, I don't worry about people suing me because I've got an umbrella liability policy, which would more than protect me if any kind of liability came about.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much.
All right, Joe. Good. Very interesting questions. We do have to run, though. Joe, Jeff, somebody, take it away, Weather Channel.
Man don't mean a thing. If it rains or it snows, why everyone knows love turns winter to spring.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
I think Noah was enjoying that song.
He's going to have to tell me.
I didn't even know what was the point of the song.
Gotcha.
Oh, gosh. Anything that turns winter spring is good with me right now.
I hear you.
We're on an open show, right, Chris?
So Money's Wilches and Wealth. We sure are.
6:54, and we only have about 4 or 5 minutes to go. If somebody wants to call and ask one question, I think we can handle it. 410-922-6680. But I was looking at this article in the Wall Street Journal. It said the title of it was Think Before You Roll Over. Think Before You Roll Over. And here's the gist of the article. I'm going to sum it up for you, okay? Insurance companies are promoting these reps to go out and sell these annuities for 401k IRA rollovers. So somebody retires from a company,
right,
and they're getting, you know, $400,000 in their 401k plan, and they're rolling it over to an IRA. And these companies are promoting them to do that and put it all into an annuity. And here's what they're offering them. One offered a Maserati to the advisor who sells $7.5 million in annuities in 2014. And the other one's offering a BMW, Range Rover, or Porsche if you put in $6 million in sales. Now, if that doesn't scare you into thinking that there's something wrong with these annuities that are being sold, then I don't know what'll scare you. Because how do they give you a bonus? How do they guarantee you all this? And then still give somebody a Maserati, a BMW, a Range Rover, or a Porsche for just $7 or $6 million. I mean, for a company like us, $6 million would mean $60,000 at the maximum of income per year. $60,000 of maximum income per year is not enough to give somebody a bonus of 8%, is not enough to give somebody a Maserati.
And service the account.
And service the account and so forth. So,
and these companies
don't
give...
There's a problem.
And yeah, and they don't pay ahead. I mean, they only pay to the reps cash they already have. So they're getting these fees.
They're getting it. And it's scary.
Yeah.
And John and Glen Burnie, quick, ask your question.
Yes. How do the ETFs keep the net asset value at the price of the conglomerate of the stock versus the closed and the mutual funds that have to that always add a...
That's a great question, John. Great question. So what he's asking is you have an exchange-traded mutual fund. That exchange-traded fund might have a net asset value of assets in the fund of $10 a share. Now, this fund, though, is trading on the stock exchange. And if it's an exchange-traded fund, it's going to trade within a narrow band of $10 a share. But if it's a closed-end fund, one that does not open any more new shares at any time, that band could be 10, 20, even 30% plus or minus the NAV.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's $10 net asset value, it could be 7, it could be 13.
Right.
So John's question is, how does an ETF keep it that tight a band? And the answer to that question is, John, that at any time an institution like a Merrill Lynch or a Morgan Stanley can buy shares or sell shares back to the fund at net asset value. And so that means that these institutions, if you're coming in to buy or sell an ETF, you can, the institution can come in and buy the shares from the institution, from the exchange traded fund. They can buy the fund, the shares at net asset value, or sell them back to the fund at net asset value, and then sell them or buy them from you at a slightly more or a slightly less price and lock in a guaranteed profit without any real risk to them. And so that arbitrage, John, are you still there, John?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, that arbitrage is a guaranteed rate of return for these institutions. And so they keep it, you know, that tight a range. Now, they can fluctuate wildly away, but normally the institutions will open up shares to arbitrage people who are buying and selling the fund and make that guaranteed return, keeping it in that tight range. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I see, because I've seen that they usually fluctuate within about 5 cents.
That is some of them. Some of them can be a much wider range, but they never get up into the 5 and 10% range. Most I've ever seen one fluctuate is 2% up or minus, not the 10, 15% that closed end does. And it's because they can open and close fund shares at any time and arbitrage that away. All right, John?
Okay, thank you so much.
Good question. Very good question. Next week, we've got a guest coming on, but I have no idea who it is. So anyway, we're finished.
We are.
Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.